6:03.
Katriona Young, thank you very much indeed. Now, as promised, live music from Bela Fleck, king of the banjo. He opened the world's biggest winter music festival, Celtic Connections, up in Glasgow a couple of weeks ago. He and his band, the Flecktones, are about to embark on a US tour. He's playing live for us in the studio. What are we going to have first, Bela?
Something African.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very much indeed. The effortless virtuosity of Mr. Bela Fleck playing live for us on In Tune.
Well, it takes a lot of effort, actually. I'm working hard.
Okay, I'll revise that. The seemingly effortless virtuosity.
I prefer that.
You sit so incredibly still. The focus, the concentration when you're playing.
It's called fear.
Is that what it's called?
Oh, yeah.
Is it really still there?
Yeah.
You can't have fear after everything you've done, really.
There's a lot of notes to get wrong on a banjo. And everyone seems like a huge glaring problem when you're playing, but not so much when you're listening.
So you're a perfectionist?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And is that what really makes you so good, gives you the edge? Do you think the perfectionism and the attention to detail is key to the musicianship? Or what is it? What other thing is it that drives you?
It's more of a pain in the butt. I mean, in fact, sometimes it's not helpful at all to the music. You know, sometimes it's just picky and stuff, but it kind of comes with the craft of getting really technically able, is that kind of focus. So I have to embrace it. But sometimes when you're improvising, you have to let yourself off the hook. And if something goes wrong, it's just part of a flow. I mean, the whole story might be great when you're making something up as you go. And if you get disheartened because you made a little mistake, you'll blow the big picture. So there's different rules for different kinds of music, you know.
Very hard, though, to rein in those feelings of attention to detail. And as you've said, not let them get in the way of the music. How, when you're doing a big gig, a big live gig, how do you stop that?
The more prepared I am, the better it usually goes. And, you know, if I'm really getting uptight, I stop drinking coffee and I take, you know, try and breathe and do all the things you would do, you know, any person would do when they have things that they're concerned about.
And is the banjo particularly technically difficult? Is it a really difficult instrument to play beautifully well?
Well, one of the issues with the banjo is the, in the style that I play, where I use metal finger picks, I've got metal finger picks hitting metal strings, and yet the goal is for it not to sound metallic.
So how do you do that?
Well, it's kind of a mind over matter thing, and you have to learn how to play through the strings in the way that when the metal hits the string, it doesn't click. And I can't explain why it doesn't always click, but if you figure out how to do that, it's almost a Zen thing. You know, if you can figure out, it's like playing without finger squeaks on classical guitar or certain bowing things, you know, that you just have to figure out how to do it. And then if you can, it makes a big difference in how sweet your music can sound.
Now, when somebody says to me banjo, I don't immediately think Africa. Mm-hmm. How did you come to African music?
Well, the banjo actually comes from Africa. And that's one of the cool things that I realized. I grew up in New York City and fell in love with bluegrass and traditional, what we call traditional banjo music in the United States. But it was kind of a strange thing for a New York City person to fall for that. I had no connection to the South. And the more I found out about the banjo, the more it actually started to make sense that a guy like me would play the banjo, because the banjo's heritage is very, very complex, and there's been a lot of different kinds of music played on it, from the slaves bringing the instrument over in a rougher form to the early days of jazz with Louis Armstrong and Jelly Roll Morton, and to, you know, eventually bluegrass is actually one of the later things that happened to the banjo.
Because when you do think of banjos, you think of Appalachia and you think of, you know, kind of beautiful houses with people sitting on porches plucking their banjo. It doesn't immediately say music that came across on slave ships. So how did you discover that? Is it an instrument that you've researched? Is part of the research about its origins part of the fascination of for you?
Well, I mean, the first book I ever got about the banjo was written by Pete Seeger, who, and right in the beginning of the book, he mentions where the banjo comes from. So it was never a secret to me, but it wasn't something that I necessarily had anything, I never thought it had anything to do with me particularly, until later, as I started just finding out about African music, just because I like all kinds of music. If I hear something interesting, I want to learn how to play it. And so I was hearing beautiful things from Africa that were just interesting to me. And then one day I realized that it would be an amazing thing to go to Africa and play with those people, especially the acoustic music. I mean, like, the Afro pop is taking care of itself, and there's great opportunities for people to hear that kind of music. But the stuff I was really interested in was the local music, and not just the folk. I mean, well, it is folk music, but it's the great stuff is to the point of, you know, I don't know if I want to say classical music, but great music from around the world. You know, some of it is on a different level.
And it was an amazing trip. I mean, it took you to where? Mali, the Gambia, to South Africa, Madagascar. Was there a particular moment on that trip where you just thought, this is the reason why I'm here?
Well, every day. It was an intense trip because every day I was trying to play this music with these people that I really didn't know very well. And so every day was like a master, what would you call it? It was like an exam to try to survive. So it was a stressful trip, but very exciting.
Did you feel musically out of your depth at times?
It's funny. I tended to know what to do, and I can't explain it. And it was part of why I went, because I'd been playing a lot of music where I was in control of it and I was able to prepare for it. But I've realized that that doesn't always bring out the best in me. I mean, it's a good thing to do. It's fun to do. It's fun to hone something and really build it. But I discovered sometimes when I would play music with people and I didn't know the music at all, sometimes things would come out of me that I would be surprised by. And so going to Africa was one of those attempts to put myself in such a unfamiliar situation that I had to go to an instinctive way of playing that I couldn't plan. And of course, I still tried to plan. If I knew I was playing with guys from who played go-go music in Tanzania, I would listen to go-go music the night before and try and have some ideas ready to go. But still, in the end, I had to react a lot. And that's what I like about that whole project, from my perspective. I mean, the thing I like the best is listening to them play. But since I'm in there and the record is about me with them, I like the fact that I had to play very responsively.
We're going to hear some very different music from you next, please. This is part of your concerto for banjo and orchestra. Just give us a little flavour of what we're going to hear.
Sure. This is the first piece I've written on my own for banjo and orchestra, or banjo classical musicians, although I've had the great honour and privilege of writing a couple of pieces with Edgar Meyer, who's an unbelievable bassist and composer, and is one of my best friends. So I watched him very closely while we were writing together, and then finally I got to go off and do this one on my own. It was commissioned by the Nashville Symphony, about a 35-minute piece for a large orchestra and banjo. Today I can just play the banjo part, so I can play a little bit of the second movement for you.
Please, if you could. Thank you very much indeed. Bela Fleck performing for us live. This is part of his concerto for banjo and orchestra. Thank you. absolutely mesmerising. Thank you very much to Bela Fleck, part of your concerto for banjo and orchestra. Incredibly atmospheric work and totally different in flavour from the African music. So this is an instrument, seems to me, that can be melodic, expressive, percussive. It can be anything you want it to be, and that's part of your project with the banjo, is that you've gone out there and made it a bluegrass instrument, a folk instrument, a classical instrument. Is that part of the mission, to evangelise about this instrument?
I guess so. When I started playing, there was a lot of sort of prejudice about the banjo, and it was because I think there was a lot of connotations based on television shows like Hee Haw, the Beverly Hillbillies, movies like Deliverance, and Bonnie and Clyde, the film Bonnie and Clyde, which had some incredible banjo playing in all of those pieces, but it always was associated with a Southern culture, a Southern white culture, and the history of the banjo, the African part of it, its role in the creation of jazz, and even the classic banjo era, which was before that, were completely forgotten. So, I mean, I think the reason I do all that is because if I'm going to play it and I'm who I am, I love the country part, the Southern part of the banjo's heritage. It's a wonderful part of it, and it's what drew me into it. But for me to be honest and be an artist that's truthful about who he is, if I just did that, it would sort of be a lie. It's just, I grew up in New York City. I didn't grow up on a cabin home on the hill. So growing up in the 60s and hearing the Beatles and then hearing jazz and loving everything I was hearing, I just wanted to learn how to play it on the instrument. So I think unconsciously, more than consciously, I think you're right, is sort of it's something to prove, you know. But I didn't want to go play saxophone or guitar or piano. This was the instrument I wanted to play, but I didn't see any reason why you had to just play bluegrass.
Do you remember the day when you suddenly realized this was the instrument for you?
I remember the day I first heard it when I was a very small child, and I heard it on the Beverly Hillbillies TV show. So, I mean, that's the only thing about railing against stereotypes, is if it wasn't for that stereotypical show, I wouldn't be playing the instrument at all, and a lot of people wouldn't be playing it today. And the resurgence that it's had has been pretty remarkable over the last 20 years. But I do remember that moment. But then my grandfather gave me a banjo when I was 15. I had been kind of looking for the banjo for all that time, and I was playing some guitar kind of in a poor fashion. But then my grandfather got me a banjo right before I started high school, and that was it. Once I had that in my hands, I took music very seriously and playing the banjo very seriously.
But not classical music, you've said, as a young man. That just was not part of your field of vision. So, well, I'm interested to know then what drew you towards writing a concerto.
Right. Well, classical music was around the house. My stepfather is a cellist, and I was named after classical musicians by my father, who I didn't know.
This is what presumably Béla Bartók. Fantastic. Good,
you're right,
Béla
Bartók.
Good person to be named after.
Anton Dvořák. And Leos Janáček are my middle names. So, I mean, the first names of those great composers. So that was sort of, you know.
So no pressure then.
Well, there really wasn't. I mean, it was just, those were just my names. And I just never mentioned the middle ones. And the first one was sort of something I had to put up with as a child. But I was more interested in just learning to play the banjo when I was 15 and just learning to play bluegrass. And then I got interested in the more modern players of bluegrass. And that took me for quite a while. And then by the time I was in my 20s, I was trying to learn Bach partitas, and I was trying to learn Charlie Parker solos and Chick Corea songs and Irish music. Anything that hadn't been done a lot on the banjo, I was curious to figure out what I could learn from it and how it would infect my bluegrass playing. And I wasn't thinking much bigger than that. But as time went on, then I met Edgar Meyer in my mid-20s, and what he was doing with the upright bass was so remarkable. And I had never been around classical musicians of his caliber before.
But even if you work with somebody like Edgar Meyer, it's a totally different sense of responsibility to throw yourself into writing a concerto. And I'm interested to know, I mean, I understand it took you a year to write. I'm interested to know what the real challenges were for you. Was it about scoring the music for orchestra, or was it more about having to play the notes you'd written for yourself?
I think if you think about, you know, all the challenges, you just be overwhelmed. So you just decide you're going to do it. And for whatever reason, I had decided to do it. And then I just took each challenge as they came. So I just created the music over the course of, I don't know, I started writing in October, and then my first draft was turned in I guess the end of April, so I guess it was less than a year.
Tell me truthfully, was there a head in hands moment where you thought, why did I take this on? This is a nightmare. Why am I doing this to myself?
Not so much. I don't know why. It wasn't that I was sure it would turn out right. I just thought this was the time that I was going to try to do this. And when I was done, I would find out if I ever wanted to do it again. The hardest part was performing it and memorizing it and being consistent playing, because I came up with some pretty hard stuff for myself to play. And in fact, that was one of the important things, was to come up with things that I hadn't done before on the banjo. And because I normally don't write things out like that. I don't write out 35 minutes of music. I improvise, or I come up with a small structure and improvise on it, or I might even work out part of a solo if I'm having trouble getting through it by improvising. But I'd never written out pieces this long, and that actually gave me a freedom to be more complex, because I was going to play them over and over again and memorize them. But then I had to actually do that, and that was the most overwhelming part of it. Also playing with the orchestra's fluid rhythm, in that I'm used to playing with percussionists, and bluegrass has a very tight rhythmic sense. Most of the music, the flectones that I play with, the guys are super metronomic power, you know, perfect players. And you don't really play that way in an orchestra. There's a lot of ebb and flow. And so how is the banjo, which is sort of structured to play rhythmically, going to play without that kind of precision, which I tend to lean on?
We're going to have a little less precision, a little more improvisation now, if we may. A short improvisation.
Okay. Sure,
from Baylor Fleck.
Tell me how much time I have, and I'll... You just get to wave at me when you want me to stop.
That's what we'll do. Okay. Baylor Fleck, who will be improvising for us, and we'll see how well he does till I wave my arms.
Well, maybe I'll think you want me to play like a chicken.
Can't ask for more than that. Improvising to the second, Baylor Fleck, playing live on In Tune. Thank you so much. You're about to start a US tour. Are there any plans for this concerto to tour as well? I want to hear it live.
High hopes. I mean, I think we have about 7 or 8 performances scheduled with different orchestras in the United States, and we're going to be putting the recording out sometime next year. And hoping to do a lot of performances with the piece. And also, we filmed the whole thing from before I had written a single note. I started just, how does a banjo player write a concerto? So there'll be a little film, a documentary about it, too.
Fantastic. And I understand you're hopefully playing in the UK again this summer. Is that right?
There is a very good chance of it.
Good. Well, yeah. Bela Fleck fans, listen out for those dates. It's been absolutely lovely to have met you. I want to know, just very finally, one unfulfilled ambition. We've talked to our guests about that today. What's the one thing you've yet to do?
I don't know.
You've only won 8 Grammys and been nominated 24, 25 times, more than that.
I think it was 14 Grammys.
Oh, you see.
You see, if it had been 13, then I could have wished for that one more Grammy. That would be my desire.
Okay, we'll leave you with your 14 Grammys. You can think about the
I'll think about
projects.
It.
Okay, we'd like an answer when you're back in the summer, please. Thank you very much indeed. Great to have met you. Well, tomorrow on In Tune, I'm going to be joined by the pianist David Grielzammer ahead of his gig tomorrow night at the 100 Club in London, the place where classical music meets clubland. So do join me.